Welcome to Within the Realm. I'm your host, Steve Garrett. Here at Within the Realm, we're about exploring the world just inside of our reach, finding amazing stuff in what others might call ordinary or mundane. There's a story behind everything, and it's all within the realm. But now, down to business. There's an old adage, write what you know. It's a good rule of thumb for podcasting, too. This show is predicated on that notion. Another trick in writing is finding your opener, a hook, something that grabs the audience's attention and keeps it. In the writing of this episode, there were a couple of developments that occurred, either of which would have made a good hook. Not being able to decide which is better, I've decided to use both. Today's story is Talking Leaves. If you've listened to this show much, you've picked up that I've grew up in the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma, specifically in the old Flint and Going Snake districts, which are now Adair County, Oklahoma. Adair County has the highest population of full-blood Cherokees in the United States, and those with Cherokee heritage outnumber those without it. When I was a kid, there were many who still spoke the Cherokee language exclusively. It was common to hear those tones and sounds being spoken in restaurants and on the streets. It was not unusual to have stores to have their signs painted in both English and Cherokee. The fact that there is a written Cherokee language to appear on these signs was amazing. The Cherokees were the first to have a written language all their own, which helped keep the spoken language alive through the years as white society attempted to eradicate it. That was many years ago, and those Cherokee-only speakers grew fewer and fewer. It was announced earlier just this week, on April 22, 2019, that the last known person to speak Cherokee exclusively had passed away. Mac Van had been born in Adair County during the Depression. He was, possibly, the last person who thought in Cherokee, with ideas framed in unique points of view by the language. And just a few weeks before Mac Van's passing, an article in the archaeological journal Antiquity appeared, covering a significant find involving his native tongue. The article covered the discovery of Cherokee markings in a cave in Alabama. The markings were made in the same characters as those found on the signs in my hometown, made in the Cherokee syllabary. Instead of using letters, the Cherokee writing system uses a character for each syllable in the language. These were not rough hieroglyphics that researchers could guess at their meanings. These markings read in complete sentences and contained specific information. These cave writings regarded a game of stickball played on April 30, 1828. Stickball held an important sacred and ceremonial place for the members of the tribe. The carvings went on to tell us the game was overseen by a Cherokee whose English name was Richard Guess, the son of George Guess, who is better known among the tribe as Sequoia. Sequoia was the inventor of the syllabary that left the message on the wall. Very little is known about the early years of Sequoia's life, including the year of his birth and the identity of his father. It's been suggested that he was the son of noted silversmith and friend of George Washington, Nathaniel Gist, or a German trader named Geist, or neither at all. He was referred to by his anglicized name, George Guess, or Gist. It has been surmised that he was born at Tuskegee, in present-day Tennessee, sometime in the 1770s. His father was absent from his life and seems to have been raised as his mother's only child. He walked with a limp from a childhood accident. He never had any formal schooling or learned to speak English. His mother, Wate, ran a trading post. He assisted her at the trading post and found success as a jewelry maker and a silversmith. Upon his mother's death, Sometime around 1800, he inherited the store. The place continued as an informal meeting place for the Cherokees of the area to socialize and conduct commerce, and enjoy an occasional whiskey. Apparently, Sequoyah's whiskey intake was more than occasional. It was said at the time, he was rarely seen sober, and began to neglect the store and his farm. Ultimately, he realized he was ruining his life, and gave up partaking in and the selling of whiskey altogether. He took up blacksmithing, while continuing to run the trading post. Sometime around 1809, he began to work on a writing system for the Cherokees. His work in the store and interactions with whites and their books, ledgers, and letters demonstrated the benefits of a written language, allowing people to transmit clear messages to other people over great distances. He called their pages talking leaves. The consensus among the Cherokees was that writing was pretentious at best and witchcraft at worst. At one point, Sequoyah's wife destroyed all of his work because she was concerned that it might be sorcery. His work was interrupted by his service with the Cherokee Regiment during the Creek War of 1813 to 1814. Although he still had his severe limp, he served in the Battle of Horseshoe Bend and others. His first attempts were to assign each word in the language a character, but he soon determined that this would be too many for people to remember. It wasn't until later that he came upon the idea to assign a character to each sound or syllable in the language, 85 of them. Many of his symbols resemble Greek and Cyrillic letters or Arabic numbers, but each has a unique Cherokee sound assigned to them. When no others were willing to learn his new system, Sequoyah taught it to his 6-year-old daughter. In 1821, he traveled to the Arkansas Territory, where many Cherokee had settled to avoid the continued white encroachment on their lands and their way of life. Interest in his written system in the West mirrored that of the East. But, at a council meeting, he asked each leader to say a word, which he wrote down in his syllabary. He then called in his daughter, who read the words. This convinced the Western Cherokees to allow a few others to learn the system. Now, let's put ourselves in that room in 1821 among a people who have never known written language. Imagine how much could have Sequoyah's demonstration have seemed like a slick magic trick to that group. The eventual acceptance of Sequoyah's talking leaves is a testament to his determination and his salesmanship. But the work continued. Upon his new students learning the system, Sequoyah wrote each letter to which they responded. This demonstration convinced the Western Cherokees of the usefulness of the syllabary as a means for communication. With this important endorsement, Sequoyah returned east, carrying a sealed letter from the council to their kinsmen. The system began to receive wide acceptance among the tribe members. In only a few years, the literacy rate among the tribal members in their own language surpassed that of their white neighbors. It was officially adopted by the Cherokee Nation in 1825. The following year, the laws of the tribe were translated and printed in their own language, and a newspaper, the Cherokee Phoenix, began publication. It was printed in both English and Cherokee. By this time, Sequoyah had moved permanently to the West. He was part of a delegation of the Western Cherokees that traveled to Washington, D.C. to negotiate with the federal government. The success of his written code had made him somewhat of a celebrity, and he was asked to sit for a portrait while he was in the Capitol. He signed the treaty with characters from his syllabary. The next few years were difficult ones for the Cherokees in the East. They were resisting efforts by the federal government under Andrew Jackson and the various state governments to remove them from their lands. Ultimately, they were forced west in 1839. Upon the arrival of the greatest part of the tribe in Indian Territory, they were bitterly divided into factions. Sequoyah worked with other leaders to bring about a peaceful reunification of the tribe, however tenuous it was. Stories of Cherokees living in Mexico began to circulate, following developments in the Texas Republic in the early 1840s. Sequoia wanted to find these lost brothers and completely reunite the tribe. In the spring of that year, he set out with his son Tisi and a few others for Mexico. At the time, he was in his late 60s or early 70s. But during this expedition, Sequoia passed away, and his resting place is unknown. Much like the details of his early years, there are a lot of tales about his final days and burial site, mostly based upon speculation. He left a lasting mark on the Cherokees and the world around him. A statue of him represents the state of Oklahoma in Statuary Hall in the United States Capitol. There were efforts to name a state made up of the Indian nations after him in 1906. His syllabary was used as an inspiration for other tribal writing systems, such as the Cree syllabaries and even tribes in West Africa. The syllabary allowed Cherokee history to be written in their own voice and helped to preserve the spoken language among the members of the tribe, which brings us back to Mac Van, the last of his kind. In recent years, the Cherokee Nation has made substantial efforts to preserve the spoken language and introduce it to new generations. Immersion classes for all ages and classes taught in high school and colleges were developed. One of the main architects of the efforts was Hastings Shade, a direct descendant of Sequoia. Mac Van and other native speakers were consulted on matters pertaining to the language and the classes to teach it, keeping a very Cherokee perspective in those efforts. Although the last Cherokee-only speaker is now gone, it is estimated that there are over 20,000 people who speak the language fluently. For me, the juxtaposition of these dueling leads of my story tell two stories. One is, Sequoia's genius and his gift of the syllabary has helped preserve Cherokee culture and language for generations, whether it be on walls of caves or in the pages of books. How much could have been lost if not for Sequoia's persistence through charges of witchcraft and lack of encouragement? The second story, Mac Van's story, is about how frail culture can be, because it is carried by people. Great efforts have been made to keep the Cherokee language spoken and alive. But if not for those efforts, how much Cherokee culture would have been lost with the passing of Mac Van? It's something to think about. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Within the Realm. You can find a full archive of past episodes, show notes, and other info at our website, withinpodcast.com. Don't miss a single episode of our show by subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast channel. Remember to spread the word. Recommend Within the Realm to at least one person you know this week. And follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Feel free to like and share our episodes. Our theme music is provided by 556 and a half, and special music is provided by Spring Eyes. And as always, thanks for listening.